Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Tefilas Kelim. Tefilas Kelim is one of those things that comes up. usually before Pesach, the Kelim Mikvahs are packed. All the people are buying new utensils. But it does come up. Let's learn a little bit about the background and some of the more common shilas that come up. We're not going to go through every type of utensil that you might have in your kitchen, but Baruch Hashem, there are many lists that have been published by different organizations, kashrus organizations, and individuals. There are plenty of lists out there, and we can certainly access them. But just some of the background that I think is important for this inyan. So if you look at your sheet, source number one, the Torah tells us in Bamidbar Perek Lamed Aleph, and this is the parsha of Klei Midyan, after the battle with Midyan, and we merited to get the spoils of the Midianite army. Vayomer Elazar HaKohen Al Anshei HaTzava HaBoim LaMilchama Zos Chukas HaTorah SheTziva Hashem Es Moshe. This is the Chukas HaTorah, interesting language, not very common. It's actually only used in two places, this expression of Zos Chukas HaTorah. One is by Parah Aduma, with the purification process if a person is Tamei Meis, and the other one is regarding this when it comes to Klei Midyan. Pasuk Chav Beis, Ach es hazahav ve'es hakosef es hanechoshes ve'es habarzel es habadil ve'es haufares. These six metals, so we have, I always get confused when I translate them, but gold, silver, nechoshes is copper, barzel is iron, bedil is lead, if I'm not mistaken, and ofares is lead, and bedil is, I can't remember. Okay.
You know what? There's an easy way to do this. Translated for us.
Let's get the exact translation so we know exactly what we're talking about here. Bamidbar Lamed Aleph. Here we go. Parshas Matos. Here we go. Gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, and lead. There we go. Tin. So bedil is tin and ofaris is lead. Tin and lead. So these are the six metals that the Torah identifies as requiring some sort of process, and as we're about to read in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, called Davar Sheyavo Va'esh, Taviru Va'esh V'Taher. So anything that is any kli that is used with fire, pass it through the fire and it will become pure. Ach B'mei Nida Yischata, which we understand to mean that you should also dunk it, immerse it in a mikvah. V'chol Ashelo Yavo Va'esh Taviru B'Mayim. And anything that is not used with fire, just immerse it in the water, and that's it, and then you're done. So that's what the psukim say. So now, obviously, the psukim are talking about things that were used with food, right? The Midianite army wasn't carrying around, you know, they weren't working for Bed Bath & Beyond. They weren't carrying around, brand new kitchen utensils. They were carrying around used, banged up, you know, army utensils. So those things that were used, not only do you have to immerse them in a mikvah, but you have to kosher them. So if they were used with things that were hot, you have to kasher them through bypassing them through the fire. And if not, if they were only used for food that was cold, so you don't have to kasher them, because as we discussed many times, cold food generally does not impart any blios to the kelim, and therefore you just have to immerse them in the mikvah. We'll talk about kashering maybe another time. So the Gemara in source number two, very interesting Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah, writes, Alokeach klei tashmish min ha'ovdei kochavim. And this is very important. This Gemara is actually going to be very important for the laws of Tevilas Kelim. If a person purchases klei tashmish, right, utensils that a person uses for food production, min ha'ovdei kochavim, or food consumption from a non-Jew, eshe darko lahatbil yatbil, anything that you normally is just used with cold, immerse it in the mikvah, And it's kosher. Lahagil yagil, anything that's used with boiling hot water, you have to immerse, do hagala, what we call hagala, immerse it in the boiling hot water. Lelabin bor, yelabin bor, and anything that's used with direct fire, like a spit or a grill or something like that, so you have to expose it to direct fire, which we call libun. So the Gemara says, Tana v'kulan tzrichin tevila ba'arba'im se'ah. All these things, whether it's treif and you're kashering it with fire, you're kashering it with hagala, whatever you're doing, it doesn't make a difference. All of these things must be kashered with arba'im se'ah, with 40 se'ah of water in a mikvah. Menon immediately, how do we know this? So it quotes the pasuk we just read from Parshas Matos. Amar Rava, the Amar Kra, called Devar Sheyavo Ba'esh, Tavir Ba'esh V'Taher, Hostiv L'cha Kosuv Tahara Acheres. So the Torah talks about one way of purifying an item, namely passing it through the fire. So why does the Torah add this description of mei nida? The mei nida yiskata, that you should cleanse it by putting into the mei nida. So says the Gemara, maim shenida toveles bohen. So that's referring to the water in which a nida is toveles. And what is that? Havi omer arbaim sa. That's a mikvah of arbaim sa. Okay. So then the Gemara goes on to explain that it doesn't make a difference if the kelim are brand new, if they were used before. Either way, it doesn't make a difference. Then Rav Sheshes asks, one second, but according to this, if you have metal scissors, let's say a barber scissors that you bought off of a non-Jew, so maybe you should tovel those as well. So the Gemara says, no, only clay se'uda amurin b'parsha. The Torah is only discussing clay se'uda. We're only talking about items that are used for food, items that are used for a se'uda, which is very important that we're going to see. Then the Gemara says that this is only talking about if you purchase these items, right? That's what happened, or you somehow procure them, as the Gemara discusses. But if they were she'ulin, if they were borrowed, then that wouldn't be the case. If you borrow an item, you do not have to tovel it. Okay, and then the Gemara ends with a very interesting discussion. If you look towards the end of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, really, in the Torah, we only discuss metal, right? The Torah mentions six types of metals. Amar Rav Ashi, hane klei zechuchis. What about glass? What about glass kelim? So Rav Ashi says, the Gemara says, that if you have glass kelim, hoil v'chinishtabru yesh lahen takana, since if they become broken, you break the glass kelim, you can fix them, ki klei matechos damu. So they're similar to klei matechos. They're similar to metal items, just like metal, if it cracks, you can mold it somehow. You can fix it. So too, when it comes to glass, if it breaks, you can fix it. So it's like a metal utensil, and therefore it requires tefillah. Now, the tefillah of a glass utensil is not midoraisa, because in the Torah it's very clear we only identified six metals. So the tefillah of a glass utensil is only going to be midrabana, right? The rabbanan came along and were gozer that a person should be tovel a glass utensil. Why? Because it's just, in some ways, it's like metal. So therefore, we're gozer that you tovel a glass utensil as well.
Shouldn't that be with any other utensil that can be repaired?
Technically.
Ceramic, anything like that.
Right, okay. So ceramic is not...
Right, ceramic is not, but you can repair it like glass.
No.
So here,
the difference is that you're repairing it by melting it down. Just like when it comes to a metal, right? A metal utensil, right? How do you repair metal? You have to melt it. You can melt it down. Either melt down the whole thing and reform it, reshape it, or you just, you know, soften that area and literally, you know, just smooth the crack over. And you can do that with glass as well, right? You can melt the glass down. When it comes to ceramic, you can't do that. That's the way. I wasn't clear. That's the way in which glass is like metal in that way, and that's why midirabanan a person's obligated to tovel glass. So that's why nowadays we have to tovel all metal items. Okay, let's say that right now. You know, we'll clarify that in a minute. But you have to tovel any metal type of kalim, and when it comes to glass kalim, you have to tovel them as well with a bracha, because again it's midirabanan, but it's with a bracha. Now the halacha is that since toveling metal items is mida oraisa, because the Torah specifies six types of metals, and toveling glass items is only mida rabbanan. So if you are toveling both, so then the poskim say that you should make the bracha on the metal items. Because since the metal items are chayiv in tevila mida oraisa, and the glass items are only chayiv in tevila mida rabbanan, so it's better to make the bracha on the metal items which are chayv and tevila mida oraisa. But of course, if you're only toveling glass items, right? You went out and you bought new drinking glasses, and now that's all I'm toveling, glass items. So of course, you do make a bracha on those glass items. Okay. Okay. So that's the yeah.
Quick point: the fact that the brayta states tevila in possession with mashma, that's not that logic is not imperative. I see what he said afterwards.
But
that's not.
Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baruch Hu.
One could, I could definitely
right.
Read the psukim, mm-hmm. learn the mission beginning of the Gemara, and kadoshim would not be it come up in my mind.
You're saying because the psukim are only dealing with old kelim, used.
Right.
Only dealing with used kelim. Right. And you hear his logic, right? I
think what he says, I don't understand his logic. Because that's yes, you have to make them, you have to kasher them.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Right. So he's arguing, arguing.
You have to kasher them, so once you kasher them,
they're like new.
Like new. I would right. argue. Of course you have to kasher them, they're trade.
Yeah, yeah, correct, correct.
So the jump is, to me, it's a huge jump.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, yeah, he's making the argument that once you kasher a kli, it's essentially like a brand new kli.
Yeah, but you have to kasher. You have to kasher.
Correct. But once it's done, once you kashered it, so now it's brand new. Now it's like a new kli.
But the process is you have to kasher and you have
correct.
To do this. And that applies to old ones, not new ones. I'm just saying.
But why do you have to tovel it once it's kashered?
Why? Because that's what the Pasuk says. Why?
So that's...
No, but seriously. The Pasuk says, if you get old stuff, this is what you have to do.
Right.
That's all. That's my only point.
Okay.
Is there ever a time that you would go to the mikveh and not make a bracha?
Sure.
You're saying that taking the glass,
sure.
You shouldn't have to make a bracha, but since it's only glass, you're making a bracha.
Right.
So
okay. We'll talk about different cases. We'll talk about some cases. Okay. When we think about what's the reason, you know, philosophically, what's the reason behind this this mitzvah of tefilas kelim? So a couple of reasons are suggested. If you look at the Prisha in source number 3, one of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, so the Prisha writes in Yoredei, in this Simon Kufchav, Hatam Evur Bi Yerushalmi, quotes a Yerushalmi, Kedei Sheyetzu Mitumaso Shel Goy LeKedushaso Shel Yisrael. So the Yerushalmi says that when non-Jews, right, have a certain amount of Tumah, right, be it as it may, however you want to define that, but and Jews have a certain amount of tahara. So when a non-Jew owns something, right, there's a certain amount of tumah that's contracted by his kalim, and now when the Jew purchases those kalim to raise the kalim from the tumah to the tahara, they require tevila. That's one reason that's given by the Prisha. The Ritva suggests a different reason. He doesn't talk about the tumah of the non-Jew. But the Ritva in source number 4 writes that it's a gzeiras melech. Right? He says it's a listen. This is a gzeiras melech. This is the Torah says. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed, and that's why we do it. But he says mishum maila she'asa'ua kitvilas ger. He says it's similar. It's similar to a tvilas ger, just like a ger. When a ger becomes Jewish, he goes to the mikvah. He immerses in the mikvah in order to again somehow purify himself. It's part of the conversion process. So too, similarly, along the same lines, when you take a kli that was owned by non-Jews, and now the kli is being owned by Jews, so in order to be malid, in order to purify it somehow, he doesn't focus on the tumah aspect of it, but just in order to purify it, to raise its madrega, so we immerse it in the mikvah. Okay, that's just philosophically.
Or the pasuk uses the terminology zos chukas ha-Torah for a very good reason.
Well, that's why, yeah, the Ritva says gzeras melech. Yeah, okay. Right? Zeras melech. True. Okay. Okay, now. So the Shulchan Aruch writes very clearly in source number 5 that HaKonam Ya'ovet Kochavim Kleis Uda Shamateches or Shazchuchis. If a person purchases utensils from a non-Jew, Kleis Uda, right? Again, whether they are metal or whether they're glass, O Kelim Amatsupim Be'avar Mibifnim, or even if you have, let's say you have Kelim that are lined with metal on one side or the other. Let's say they're lined on the inside with metal. The outside is plastic or something like that. And the inside is metal. Okay, you have kelim like that. So all of those kelim, afa pishem chadashim tzarich la'atbilam b'mikveh o'mayim shalarayim, so you have to be tovel them. And then sources 6 and 7, which we already described, basically the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan just explained that metal is chayv in tevilah midoraisa, and glass is only chayv in tevilah midorabanan. Okay. So that's the halacha that's the general halacha, the general background of Tevilas Kelim. Now, one very important thing is that we focus, the Gemara uses this lashon, and we see the Shulchan Aruch uses the same lashon as well, of Klei Se'uda, right? Klei Se'uda, which means that it has to be something that's used in either the preparation of food or in the consumption of food. Okay? Now, here's where, and this is what Stewie asked before, sometimes when things when you begin to tovel things without a bracha. So sometimes there are cases where for example, storage containers. Okay, now storage containers, technically speaking, do not require a bracha. Do not require tefillah. And especially if they're never brought to the table, imagine you have something that's used for inedible food, like a flour canister. Okay, you have a canister that you use to store flour in. So that type of kli does not require tefillah. Why? Because it's not kli se'uda. It's certainly not used during the consumption of food. It's not used at the table. It's not a plate or a fork or a cup or something like that. That's certainly kli se'uda. And we assume that kli se'uda doesn't only mean utensils that are actually used at the table, but anything that's used in the production or in the preparation of food. But a storage container is not really used in the preparation of food. Storage container is used to store things that are used to prepare food. So that's why a storage container, technically speaking, does not require tevila at all, especially if you don't bring it to the table. Other things that are used in the production of food, right, in the preparation of food, so any pots or pans, knives, mixing spoons, things like that, all do require tevila, because those things are all necessary for the preparation of food. Things that only come into contact with raw food, okay? So let's say, for example, you have a grater that's only used, let's say a potato grater or something. It's only used for potatoes. Let's say some people have a cheese grater, so that already, cheese is edible, so that's that you wouldn't be able to, that would require tefillah. But if you have, let's say, a potato grater, which is only used for raw food, okay, it's in the beginning stage. It's not even used in the preparation. It's used to just to chop up the inedible foods, okay, in the raw state that they're in. So those things would require tefillah without a bracha, something like that.
Tefillah, right?
Just without a bracha, right?
What's the out for a toaster?
Okay, hold on a second. We'll talk about that. Okay, so let's now talk about. I want to talk about three topics. One topic is glass bottles. Let's say you buy a Snapple in a glass bottle, okay, or a Coke in one of those old glass bottles, okay? So obviously, right, we all know that we drink from those bottles. We don't require tevila, right? You never heard this, that you have to spill them out and tovel them before drinking from them, right? So the question is why? Right? Why are we allowed to buy a glass Snapple bottle without tefillah? Right? We're buying it from the non-Jew, so why are we allowed to buy that without tefillah? That's one thing I want to talk about. Then I want to talk about aluminum pans, okay, which touches on a similar inyan. And then I want to talk about some of the electric appliances. We'll talk about some of those. Okay. So when it comes to the glass bottles, it's very interesting. Rav Moshe has a very interesting svara in source number 8. And Rav Moshe writes, "Ubedivar hakankanim vehatzluchios sheyesh liYisrael machmas shelokach minochri yein sraf u'shaar mashkin she'enim karen ela biklehem." So he says, imagine you buy schnapps from a non-Jew, and it's sold in a glass bottle, and now you have the bottle. Okay, and let's say you don't want to throw away the bottle; you want to use it for something, or you have some other dish, that pickle jar or something like that that you bought some items in. It's sold in the glass jar. Now you want to use it. Mistaver lanius daiti, says Rav Moshe. In my opinion, I think she'ain tzrichin tefila kesherotza achar shenisroken akli lishtamish bo lemashkin acherim. Rav Moshe says that I don't think you need to tovel it, even if you want to reuse it. I decide, you know what, I really like this Snapple bottle. I'm going to refill it with water every day, and it's going to be my water bottle. Says Rav Moshe, you don't have to tovel it. Why don't you have to tovel it? Listen to this svara. It's a great svara. He doesn't need my haskama, but it is a great svara. Writes Rav Moshe, Vitami, what's my reason? He says, when you purchase this Snapple bottle, right, what are you buying? Are you buying a bottle? You're not buying a bottle. You're buying Snapple. Now, they can't just sell you the liquid. They have to sell it in something. So they put it in a bottle, right? So says Rav Moshe that if they're just putting it in the bottle, just because they need it, they need to somehow get that liquid to you, right? So the bottle is batel to the liquid, he says. The bottle is batel to the liquid. You're not machshiv the bottle at all. It's not something significant. I just want the liquid. Right? Now, he doesn't say this, but the proof to this is that usually, what do you do with the bottle when you're done with it? You toss it. You don't care about the bottle. Right? You don't care about it. So writes Rav Moshe, the bottle is bottled to the mashkin. V'nimtza, shelo kana meha'akum kli klal, Rav Moshe says. You didn't buy a bottle from the non-Jew. You bought Snapple. You didn't buy a bottle. The bottle, the guy threw in for free, essentially, because you need some way to get the Snapple to you. But the bottle is not chashuv. When does the bottle become a kli? The rak eitzel ha-yisroel nase kli. Sheleka alzed in tvila. So he says, when I empty the bottle, and now I decide I'm not going to throw out my Snapple bottle, but instead I'm going to refill it, when I do that, I've now made it into a kli. So if I've now made it into a kli, if a Jew makes a kli, a Jew doesn't have to tovel it. So writes Rav Moshe, that's why, in his opinion, Rav Moshe says, I don't think you ever have to tovel any of these glass kalim that you buy things in. Why? Because again, when you first buy it, it's bottled to the food, it's bottled to the drink, and therefore it's insignificant in its own right, does not require tefillah. You didn't purchase a kli at all. And then when you decide to reuse it, so now you've made it into the kli, and now a Jew makes it into a kli, so it doesn't require tefillah. That's Rav Moshe's svar. Yeah.
So if one buys an utensil, which could be used repeatedly, but he decides, I'm going to buy this to make this item and throwing it out, does that require tefillah?
Okay, so that's an interesting question.
Corollary is, according to the precious reason that there's some
certain tumah
there,
right?
So whether you're purchasing it as a kli or not, you're drinking from a dover that was,
it still retains some level of tumah. Right. It still retains some level of tumah.
You use it again or not?
I hear what you're saying. Right.
You should never be able to purchase any bottle containing anything.
It's an interesting application, right? It's an interesting application. I didn't think about that. That's interesting. It's a good point. I'm not sure. It's a good point, you know, about the Prisha. But in terms of your question, I think that I'm not sure that it would depend on a person's individual kavana. I mean, it probably depends on what most people would do with this. You know, what do most people, we have like, you know, butla daito etzel kol adam. You know, we generally like to lump people into groups, you know. So just because you have one meshugana who decides that he's going to, you know, that he is going to use something or he's not going to use something, so we don't necessarily, you know, make our rules based on that. I saw something interesting, though. Rav Heinemann from the Star K writes that that on bottles that are unique or you know, somehow very chashuv. You know, sometimes the bottle itself is chashuv. You know, usually not. Usually you buy a Snapple bottle, it's not chashuv, right? It's just some glass. But sometimes you buy something and it's a unique, a decorative bottle or something like that. So he says that might be different, right? That you might not apply Rav Moshe's svara to that, because if it's a unique or decorative bottle, then it's hard to say Rav Moshe's svara that the bottle is insignificant and it's bottled to the kli, because here part of the purchase was the decorative bottle.
Well, I guess the question is, though, what was the intent? In other words, were you buying it?
Right.
That's my question.
But it might,
if you were still buying it,
right,
for what was in it.
Correct.
And
yeah, but in this case, it might depend also on what the seller is selling it for, as.
Okay.
Meaning, if the seller's charging more because it's in a decorative bottle, which, you know, on the market, that's what happens, right? When they sell things in a plain container, it's a one price, and all of a sudden you get a little bit of a decorative container, and the price jumps up. So then, part of it is for the container. So then it's, you know, according to that, it would be significant. I saw Rav Heinemann also writes, interestingly, this was a little bit of a chiddush to me, but Rav Heinemann writes that if there's a deposit on the bottle, right? If there's a deposit on the bottle, so he says the deposit, you're paying for the bottle then. Like, what do you do when you buy something that has a deposit? You pay for it, and then they tack on an extra dollar or whatever for the deposit, right? When you buy water, I remember the first time I have it, I'm like, I showed the person, I'm like, what is this? And she was like, that's the deposit. I was like, oh. but they tack on extra money for the bottles. So he says that in the case of a bottle deposit where you're paying extra for the bottle, so then you wouldn't have this svara either. That you actually do need to tovel the Snapple bottle now, not right away. Meaning, not. I don't think there's anybody that I know of who says that you have to tovel a Snapple bottle when you get it. You know, that you can't drink out of a Snapple bottle. I did once hear about one posek who held that way, that you're not allowed to drink out of out of glass bottles because of the chashash tefillah. It's one person that I heard it in the name of.
What about the inside of the bottle? But when you tefill a bottle,
yeah,
water is going inside and outside. Right?
Correct.
It has to.
Right.
Okay. So even if you tefill the unused Snapple.
No. He says he doesn't say you're not toveling your Snapple bottle in the mikvah. He says you have to pour it out. You can't drink from the bottle. Yeah. No, yeah, you're right.
Wouldn't that be the same case with the aluminum cans?
Aluminum cans.
Right, no, it's the cans of soda.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, correct. Right. Okay, we'll get there in a second. So, but there are those who disagree with Rav Moshe Svara. Because Rav Moshe Svara, I mean, although it sounds like a good Svara, but it's a little bit of a chiddush to say that it's not a kli, and then you made it into a kli, because you can argue against Rav Moshe, and you can say, what are you talking about? It's not what you mean, you're making it into a kli. You're not making it into a kli. It was a kli before. You're just the guy's using it to transport the Snapple, and you decide to use it to transport your water. So what do you mean you're not making it into a kli? So there are those who argue that's not the case, that you do have to tovel a Snapple bottle if you wish to reuse it. Right? If you wish to reuse it, you have to tovel it. Now, why wouldn't you have to tovel it to begin with? So then the svara is that since it's something that's considered disposable, because since ruba de ruba, the vast majority of people take the Snapple bottle, drink it, and toss the Snapple bottle in the trash, or maybe the recycling. Right, if they're environmentally friendly, right? So you see that nobody is being machshev this Snapple bottle. Nobody is considering this a kli. Okay, if you decide to use it, so now you're being machshev it. So if you're being machshev it, then you have to tovel it. Meaning then you're treating this as a kli that you bought from the non-Jew. So you got to tovel it. But assuming that you're just taking it, you're drinking from it once, and then you're throwing it out, so you're not being machshev the kli. You don't care about the kli. The kli is not chashuv. Right, and therefore that would not require tevila if you're treating it as a disposable bottle. I think that's the general practice, that most people do not reuse glass bottles unless they tovel them first. I would recommend toveling without a bracha, because Rav Moshe does hold that you don't need it to tovel it. So I would say you should, in that case, you should tovel without a bracha.
Can we define what part of the process the guy has to? What's his role? Is it at some point in time he has to have owned that kli? Is that what we're saying?
Yes, as opposed to what? Yeah.
I suppose, I don't know, that he bought it, the guy is a middleman, he never takes ownership. He's delivering. I sent my guyish worker to go pick up a pot that I'm buying from a Jew.
If he owned it at one point, then you would have to tovel it. Yes, yeah.
And once the guy owns it, that's it. So in other words, unless I buy it from a Jew or bought it from a guy,
right,
I have to be toveled. Is that correct?
If you bought it from a Jew...
Who bought it from,
and the Jew didn't tovel it.
He was a middleman.
And the Jew did not tovel it. Right, yeah, then you have to tovel it. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So at some point in time it was owned by a non-Jew.
It's not the touching, it's the owner.
No, I understand, that's what I'm trying to say.
You're saying once, yeah, if
at
it was never toveled.
Time,
yeah.
If a guy owned it, then it has to be, it requires skill.
If he owned it when it was a kli, meaning if a guy owns raw material,
and he
sells the raw material to a Jewish factory owner who then fashions the kli,
right.
So then the Jew made the kli, then it's okay.
At some point, he has to own the kli.
Correct.
Otherwise, anytime you shake your guy's hand, you have to go to the next one. It has to be ownership, of course.
I'm sure there's some
kind of stuff. So what happens to pay when you sell for us?
Oh, great. Great question. That's why in the shtar, it says that you're not selling the kelim. Because you're absolutely right. If you would sell all of your kelim to the guy, then after Pesach, you would have to tovel all your kelim again. We don't sell the kelim. We sell in the shtar. No, in the shtar it writes, in the shtar it specifies that the kelim are not being sold, and the chametz in the kelim is being sold. Because you're absolutely right. If you would sell your kelim to a non-Jew, you would have to tovel all them after Pesach. Get going, Marvin. You know, you got to start. Okay, but that's a very good point.
So if you
it's a very good point.
Sell your chametz to somebody else other than
no, no, no.
And it doesn't say that. You're
all the rabbis say that. All the rabbis do it. One very interesting shaila. My wife bought a glass challah board. Okay, a glass decorative challah board for Shabbos. We still use it. So I wasn't sure if it required tevila or not, because it's certainly a kli. I mean, it's a plate. It's a glass plate. You know, so it's certainly
equated the glass to the metal again.
Yeah, it's certainly a kli. So, but I just wasn't sure. You know, was it made by? I wasn't sure if it was made by Jews, made by non-Jews. You know, I have no idea. I bought it at a store. You know, and just because it's Judaica doesn't mean that Jews made it. You know, non-Jews are businessmen also. Yeah. So it's interesting. So I asked my Rav at the time, and he told me that it required tefillah. Why? Because he said that I knew that it was made in Israel. I think this thing was made in Israel. So he told me that in Israel they don't produce their own glass. This is what he told me. He said they don't produce glass in Israel. He said the glass is they import glass from other places. So the glass is fashioned into sheets, and then it's imported from France or wherever it's imported from. And then it's cut down to size, you know, once it gets there. This is what he told me. So he said that once it's in the sheet form already, then it's already a kli. So now just because you cut it and you make it smaller, now you make it into a smaller square, so that's not making it into, it's already a kli. So you just cut it down, so he said that it would require to be, yeah.
But if the challah, all the challah board is doing,
yeah,
is the challah, after it's baked, after it's cooked, is right, just sitting on it.
Correct.
So if that's considered a kli,
yeah,
then your glass shelves in your refrigerator also have to be considered a clay, especially, for example, if you have jello, if you have some kind of pudding that you must put after you mix it in the refrigerator,
uh-huh,
to gel,
okay,
then for sure that shelf, you know, you can't just throw it in the refrigerator and fold it. So that's as much, if not more, of a clay than a challah board.
I hear your argument.
You don't put food on the refrigerator shelf.
No, so first of all, generally, the food does not come into direct contact. Anything that the food does not come into direct contact with usually does not require tefillah at all. So a challah board, the food does come into direct contact with. The other argument I'll make is that when it comes to refrigerator shelves, technically speaking, you don't need refrigerator shelves. If you just pile everything up on top of each other, it'll accomplish the same goal. The refrigerator will do the exact same thing, even if it's jello. Right? The only thing is that it's just inconvenient not to have shelves. Right? But if you would put your challah down directly on the table without a plate, or you would put your chicken down on the table, your wife would get upset at you. So that's why. So you need a plate. You need to eat off of a plate. You know. So that's why it's clay suda. Okay. So that's in terms of these bottles. Okay. Now there is a discussion about other types of metals. So the Torah only enumerates six types of metals. Now since that time we've discovered other types of metals. And the question is, let's say aluminum, for example, right? Real aluminum. So does aluminum require tefillah? It's not mentioned in the Torah, but it is metal. So there's a whole discussion about this. It's a big machlokas if other types of metals require tefillah or not. Rav Moshe seems to say in the tshuva that he feels that the Torah was specifying these six specifically. And if the Torah specified six, that means that it's only these six, and any other metals that were around at the time and people knew about or didn't know about, it doesn't matter, and they're not included. But nevertheless, when it comes to tefillah, Rav Moshe says essentially that you should be told of these things, albeit probably without a bracha, when it comes to other metals not mentioned in the Torah. Any composites, by the way, anything that's like a mixture of metals, so then you go by the rov, you go by the majority of what it's made out of. But there is a discussion about aluminum. But let's assume for the time being that you would require at least tefillah without a bracha, right? Let's say at least tefillah without a bracha on these types of metals. So what do you do with aluminum pans, like disposable pans? Okay, what do you do with the disposable pans? Now, you know, recently, if you looked over the last few years, they've started making disposable pans with a hechsher. Right? I don't know if you've seen this, but if you buy them in your local kosher supermarket, with a hechsher, a big stamp in the aluminum on the bottom that says "Ein Tzarich Tefillah," right? A big stamp on the bottom, because there is a big machlokas about aluminum pans. Okay, and I'm sure we all know that there are some people who use aluminum pans once and throw them in the garbage, and there are some people who might be a little bit more frugal who use aluminum pans and reuse them and scrub them and dry them and dishwash them, and then you reuse them because, after all, they're pretty sturdy until they get bent out of shape or too disgusting, and then you throw them out. So there are really two practices and two schools of thought about this. So what I believe is the general consensus among poskim is there are some poskim who say that aluminum pans do not require tefillah, and there are some poskim who say aluminum pans do require tefillah. What the Masorah that I've received is that it depends how you're using them. If you're using them as disposable, meaning I'm using it once and I'm throwing it out right after. I'm not reusing them, right? So then you're treating them as disposable pans. If you're treating them as disposable pans, so then it's not a kli chashuv. It's not a chashuv kli, and therefore it would not require tevila. However, if you decide, if you're the type of person that's going to reuse the pans and is going to use the pans, you know, because they're sturdy and they're good, and you know, and I can save money and I'll clean them. So then, in that kind of a case, you should be tovel those things, you know, albeit without a bracha, albeit without a bracha. Unless you buy the ones that say ain tzarich tevila, and then you don't need to.
What does that mean?
Presumably, it means that it was manufactured by a Jewish company.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does that mean you could use something once and not have to tie?
Good question. The answer is no. Okay. The answer is no. That's only for things that are really disposable. Meaning those pans are really disposable, right? In fact, if you look on the box, I don't know if they say disposable.
But I use it the one time.
Correct. Right. Right. But if they're disposable, it's the same. It's a similar. It's not exactly the same logic as the Snapple bottle, but it's because the Snapple bottle has a Snapple in it. But it is a similar type of logic that you're not being machshiv that kli at all, right? I'm not being machshiv this. It's a disposable kli. It's not something chashuv. So if it's not something chashuv, it's disposable, so then it would not require tevila. That's the logic behind that. But that doesn't mean there's a misconception based on that, that people think, oh, if I bought something, Erev Shabbos, I don't have time to run to the Kelim Mikvah, so I can use it once without tevila. That's a misconception. There's no such halacha. There's no halacha that you can use it once without tevila. Right? If it requires tevila, it requires tevila. If it doesn't require tevila, it doesn't require tevila. If it's disposable, so then you can use it and throw it out. Right, but there's no halacha that you can use something once, you know, and then be tovel it later. Okay, that's to clear that up.
What is reusable with aluminum pin mean for a different purpose? If you go to Gourmet Block,
yeah,
and you tell them give me a pound of rice, and they put it in a tin,
right?
You bring it home and you eat a little bit of it,
right?
You put it in the oven to warm
right.
it up,
right?
And you eat a little bit of it,
right?
And now you put it in the refrigerator. And you take
that's
it out
fine.
Tomorrow,
no, that's the same food. Use. That's the same
so,
use.
So if you use it for a different purpose,
correct. If I would empty the rice out and now put my cholent in to heat it up, you know, that would be a problem. Yeah.
Mr. Rabbi.
Yeah.
So, pursuant to what Steve said, if you do get something prepared food in a tin,
right?
So does Gourmet Glot assume that you're using it once, or can that it was from a manufacturer and they're not requiring it to fill?
Okay, so you have to ask Gourmet Glot that question. I'm assuming that they do not tovel their pans, and they probably just assume that you're going to use it and throw it out. That's what I'm assuming. Yeah. So I assume that if you want to reuse it again, now if you take the rice out and you see there's a stamp that says Ein Tzarich Tevila, then you're okay. But I think on the 9x13s I haven't seen them, but on the big ones they have that stamp on the bottom. But anyway, okay, we only have a few minutes left, but I want to talk for a minute about electrical appliances. So technically speaking, if you think about an electrical appliance, it should require tevila, right? If you think about it, right? Take a hot water urn, okay? So just like if I have a kettle that I fill up with water and put on my stove to cook the water, that requires tevila. It's like a pot, right? So too, if I have an urn that does the same thing, it's a metal urn, or, you know, and it cooks up my water, so it should require tefila. So technically speaking, we would imagine that it would require tefila. Now the problem is that people are concerned that electrical appliances will get ruined if you tovel them. Okay? Now, first of all, that's not always true. It depends on the electrical appliance. I've toveled many urns, and they have never gotten ruined. Okay? The trick is that you have to allow them significant time to dry. So if they dry, if you allow them significant time to dry in a warm area, so then, you know, it should be good. I'm like a little bit cautious. I usually leave them for a week, you know, without touching them, and then they're dry. And I've done this with countless electrical appliances.
You're electrocuted, where that feel.
And it does work, okay? Now there are certain svaras that some poskim suggest to get you out of tevila, so to speak. One svara, which was offered by the Chelkas Yaakov and others, is that when you plug the electrical appliance into the outlet, essentially what you're doing is you are attaching it to the building. You're attaching it to the ground.
Of course.
And anything that's mechubar lakarka, anything that's attached to the ground, does not require tevila. This was his svara, and again others as well. Many vehemently disagreed with that svara and said just because you plug something in with a little puny cord does not mean that you've attached it to the ground. If you literally attach it to the ground, so that's fine. But if not, then that doesn't work.
A built-in gas range, and the gas range is because it's attached to the building.
Yeah.
Well,
you're not toveling your grass.
My toaster oven was bolted to the wall.
You're saying it was installed in your wall.
My
so then, yeah.
Was installed in my wall.
Yeah. Okay, right. Technically, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. If it's built in, maybe. Okay. Now, the others give a svara. What some suggest is that you can. What you can do is, some suggest that you can take it apart, okay? Take it apart, and then put it back together. Now, you have to know what you're doing if you do this, okay? If you take it apart, now you have to take it apart to the point where it's not going to work, right? Where you have to take it apart so it's not working, and then put it back together. If you've done that, so then essentially what you've done is that you, the Jew, have built the kli, right? The Chacham HaTzadim suggests this when they had these big pots that were hard to tovel. So he said that you should basically bore a hole in the pot and then have a Jewish craftsman fix it so that it's not usable, and now it's usable. So that would be another way to do it. I think that there are some addresses that you can send your appliance to and they will do this for you. They'll take it apart and put it back together for you to avoid the tevila.
That wouldn't work for Hefes Tuma, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I hear what you're saying, but I'm not sure about tevila. I'm not sure about Tuma. Yeah. There are another suggestion that's given, but this is not such a great one. The Shulchan Aruch talks about a case where you realize on Shabbos that you have something that you want to use, and you didn't tovel it. So there's a machlokas if you're allowed to tovel on Shabbos. The reason why you might not be able to is because you're mesakin kli. You're not allowed to use the kli, and now all of a sudden you tovel it. You're allowed to use it. So therefore, we generally do not tovel on Shabbos. So what the Shulchan Aruch recommends is that what you should do is you should give it as a present to a non-Jew. Give it as a present to a non-Jew. Okay, so it's his. I'm borrowing his kli. So if I'm borrowing his kli, so then I don't need to tovel it because we learned before that you don't need to tovel borrowed kelim. Now the only thing is that Mishnah Berurah says that after Shabbos you should tovel it because it's not a good idea. This is a short-term solution. And that's why some recommend you should just give your electrical appliance, like your Keurig machine, you know, give it to a non-Jew. Right? And just, you know, ask them if you can borrow it, you know, l'olam va'ed. So, but others say it's not that, you know, you're playing games. It's not accurate. There are those who suggest that, that if the kli will be ruined, okay, if the kli will be ruined, then there's no requirement for tefila. Then there's no requirement for tefila. Why is that? So basically, the Rav Shlomo Zalman has a svara where he's talking about a case where you're in a hotel where the Jewish owners of the hotel did not tovel their kelim. So you let it eat from that hotel. So there are those who say no, but Rav Shlomo Zalman said you're allowed to. Why? He said because... He said there are two things when it comes to tefillah. You have a mitzvah to be tovel your kelim. You also have an isser that you're not allowed to eat from kelim that were not immersed in a mikvah. Now he said that isser is only midrabbanan. The isser to eat from those kelim is only midrabbanan. So he said the rabbanan only said that isser in a case where you can fix it. But if you can't fix it because I'm in a hotel, I can't take their kelim out to a mikvah now and say I'll be right back, you know, and take their kelim out to the mikvah and immerse them in the mikvah. They won't allow me to do that. So in a case where I cannot fix it, the Rabbanan never imposed that Isser. So then there's no Isser to eat off of those types of kelim. So some suggest that the same thing could be applied to electrical appliances that will get ruined with immersion in a mikvah. That if they're going to get ruined, so then Chazal never imposed, you can't be told them because they'll get ruined, Chazal never imposed an Isser to use them without Tevila because there's nothing that you can do to fix it. So that's what some argue. Not everyone agrees to that. Which is why there are those who don't use the, you know, these Keurig machines, even though everybody has them. But there are those who don't use them for this reason, because you can't tovel a Keurig machine. You can't tovel because there's no way to get the, you know, to get it in. I once heard someone suggest that you could tovel it, but it's not, it's not advisable. Even I would not do it.
I think there's a place now that you.